Hello and welcome to Mega City Book Club, a podcast all about the collected editions from the galaxy's greatest comic, 2000 AD. I'm Eamon Clark, and my guest for this episode is an extremely dedicated fan and collector of all things 2000 AD, who I've met through the various Southern Contingent meetups, Guy Robbins. Welcome to the book club, Guy.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's very good that you could be here. So you know what comes first. It's 2000 AD origin story time. Can you remember what was your first prog with 2000 AD?
I'm afraid I'm a bit of an old fart, and my first prog was number one.
Another prog winner.
Yes, I am that old. And I also remember walking around the streets with number two stickers stuck all over me as well.
And did they give you the power of computer-generated hyperpower?
If only they did. Yes.
Excellent. And you've been with it ever since prog one?
Unfortunately, on and off. I think I've rebuilt my early comic collection probably at least three times since then.
Right.
I've sort of come and gone for various reasons. You get to a stage in your life when you're growing up from a small child to a teenager to a young man when other things become higher priorities through either circumstance, financial obligations or women, I suppose, is probably an easy way of
the usual distractions.
The usual distractions,
collector.
Yeah. But now I've gone back a few, I think three times I've had to sort of start basically from scratch, which is a bit annoying because some of the early stuff now is very difficult to get hold of, whereas before it wasn't. So
yeah. Okay. So tell us, what's the book we're just talking about today? What's the splendid volume we've
We're talking about The Daily Dreads, Volume 1, 1981 to 1986.
Excellent. Published obviously by 2000 AD and Rebellion in November 14.
Yep.
So tell us a little bit about why you've chosen the book and some of the history of Judge Dredd in the Daily Star.
Okay, this book really covers Judge Dredd as he appeared in the Daily Star, the red top daily paper on Saturdays. So it was a once a week strip as opposed to the daily strips that he went to later, which is why it only covers the early years, 81 to 86.
Yeah.
Although at the end they have managed to squeeze in some early daily strips, but mainly,
yeah, there's a few of the daily ones coming in right at the end, isn't there?
Yeah, they've put the first two stories in, but again, that's really only the first the first 6 months or so of 86. It's still only early 86, really.
Right.
Again, two reasons really I like it, mainly because most of it, the vast majority of it, is all by Ron Smith. Still my favourite Dredd artist by a long, long way.
Splendid. I'm glad to hear you say that, yeah.
Yes, there is no one to compare. You can keep your Carlos, even though he was the originator, the gay Spanish pirate artist, as quoted by John Wagner several times every time you talk to him about it.
Yeah, the first character design, and John Wagner said he looked like a Spanish pirate.
You can keep your Bolland with his oversized boots, and you can keep your McMahon with his weird helmets. I have to say, Ron Smith is still my Dredd artist. And I think as much, really, for Mega City, there's still been no one that draws Mega City quite as well as Ron did. And it's a tragic tale of an artist getting old. And having met Ron several times, and he's very ill at the moment, of course, because he is in his...
He's in his 90s now, isn't he?
Yes. I mean, having been around to his place a couple of times, and I know his daughter reasonably well, I'm still waiting for the anonymous email or phone call giving me the bad news of when he does finally leave us. But a great man. I mean, someone who flew Spitfires during the Second World War. I mean, that's the sort of character he is.
Yeah, it's remarkable, isn't it? A Spitfire pilot comes out, works in animation and film studios, I think.
Yeah,
and then
rank organisation at, I think it was actually Brentford on the Great West Road. It was there originally, I think.
Right.
You know, working in a big place where there was lots of people and got into cartooning from that sort of avenue. And, such a perfect gentleman as well. I mean, those of us that were lucky to meet him at the sign in Uptown, oh, God, it must be three or four years ago now.
Yes, in London Forbidden Planet.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was for now, actually. Was it for...
I can't remember if it was Free Comic Book Day or something like that.
It might have been Free Comic Book Day, actually. But yeah, it was definitely one to get to, because that was probably the last time he would have been out for a long, long time. And it was a bit of a, talking to his daughter, she was there then, it was a bit of a struggle to get in there then, and he looked very frail then.
Yes.
But his story of how he stopped drawing was tragic as well, because he was he used to draw not with a pen but with an actual nib.
Oh right.
That he used to ink. So he used to dip his nib and then draw like that, as opposed to using a pen, like, because he's an old, you know, he's a proper old school artist.
Yeah.
You know, from the proper days, I guess. I mean, from the way he was taught, I guess, coming out of the Air Force. And it was tragic. He drew a line, turned back to his inkwell, dipped his nib, went back and couldn't find his line. And it was as quick as that.
Yes.
And I think Cam Kennedy is having the same problem now. So I think Cam's in the same boat as well now. But literally it was, you know, 2 seconds and his eyes had gone.
Macular degeneration. Nasty. Yeah. Very. I mean, a terrible thing to happen to a great artist, as you say.
Yeah.
I mean, that Forbidden Planet signing was fascinating, because I was there as well. And... Mm-hmm. I remember that when the other droids were introduced, they got, you know, a polite round of applause. And then when Ron Smith was introduced, it was like a cheer.
That mayhem, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, I think possibly it was Dan Abner and Ben Wilshire were there as well.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to be signing stuff, but actually they were standing up trying to get their stuff signed by Ron Smith as well, weren't they?
I mean, normally you get... At the signings, you'd normally get sort of four or five initially advertised, and you're lucky if you get three droids turn up because of commitments and schedules, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and that's not a slur on them. It's just how, you know, how timescales work. But I think there was about seven or eight there, just mainly to see Ron.
Yes.
I think, you know, because they're all big fans of him as well. Anyone who's been around, you know, the old school guys like Carlos, like Mick and Ron and all those old school guys that have been, you know, and Ian Gibson as well, all the ones that have been around since the beginning, you know, the second and third and even the fourth generation of artists that were on now, because they're all so old, they're all fans of the original guys as well, because they grew up reading them, their strips as well. So, you know, when they get a chance to meet them, they all want to be there to get their stuff signed as well.
Absolutely. So it's a great book for showcasing Ron Smith's art. And of course, Ron Smith gives us Mega City One like nobody else, really. I mean, it's also a great book for introducing some of the, well, just the world of Dread and the world of Mega City One, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's stories in, you know, 8 to 10 little capsules. I mean, in all these strips, all the characters appear that you see. You know, you get Shuggy and Max Normal, you get Mutants, you get all the characters.
Yeah.
You know, you get Anderson, you get Dredd, you know.
You get the Chief Judge, you get...
You get everyone. You get cameos by, you know, people that were in the news at the time. Boy George makes an appointment, you know, makes an appearance. You get, you know, John Wagner makes a cameo as a, you know, in the Face Change one.
Yeah.
But you also get other ones where you get ISO block judges that appear that you don't ever see anywhere else. You know, you get ISO block judges with... IB on their badges and stuff like that you don't see, don't ever appear anywhere again.
No.
You know, and things like that, and you get, you know, some of the plants, but with, you know, because it's all written by Wagner and Glant, you know, T.B. Grover, you get synopsis of just about every Dread story over that early 80s and mid-80s time period. You know, you get the Apocalypse War makes an appearance. You know, every story that is in the prog, you know, appears in these, because it was, you know, money for old rope for them. They could massage a story that they've already written, you know, or pinch a story. There's one story that I thought was Invasion Earth, I think it is, from 83.
Right.
Where these aliens turn up and they get, you know, they're going to invade Earth and take over Earth. They turn up and they're like 2 inches high, you know, and it's straight out of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy from 77 or whenever that was.
Yeah.
You know, so they're not, you know, they're not averse to nicking the odd good storyline here and there. So, you know, it's great, but it's great to see it, because you think, hang on, I've known this story from somewhere else, and it takes you a while to piece it together. But, you know, that's the art of a good writer, isn't it? To take a good story. But some of the artwork is just, you know, superlative, you know. It's just everywhere you look, there's just more detail, and you look at it, and it's just, you know, Block War makes an appearance, of course, and you just think, you know, and it's iconic.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's presented in a lovely hardback in a landscape format, which obviously fits the Saturday Dread strips from the Daily Star, which, as you said, they're sort of, you know, two, sometimes three rows of panels, maybe two, three, four panels to a row, but not much more than that, and telling a story in each one. Mm-hmm. And yeah, all the sort of Wagner and Grant, as you say, writing throughout.
Yeah,
there are other artists. There's a little bit of Brett Ewins, Ian Gibson.
Yeah, there's right at the end of the towards the end of '86, right towards the end of the year. There's I think there's a single one by John Higgins. There's a single one by Steve Dillon, and then there's a few by Ian Gibson, because Ian then started doing some of the daily ones. So I think it was sort of a test bed for him. Because Ron did some daily ones as well, and then Ian did a few of the dailies as well. So I think it's sort of a test bed to get them into it as well. You know, this is what you're going to get into if you take it up, I think. But I think the John Higgins one and the Steve Dillon one, I don't think they've ever been reprinted. So it was good to see them, because I hadn't actually seen those before. I'd seen the Gibson ones, but the, where is it? I've got Brett Ewing's one here, Beggar. And they're saying here that it's never been reprinted.
Yes, because what rather helpfully, along the bottom of each page, we've got a title of the strip, the writers, obviously Wagner and Grant, then the artists, and then whether or not it's been reprinted or not previously.
Yes.
Because some of them were printed in...
the collections, yeah. They bought out a series of books. Was it Titan? It was Titan, wasn't it? Titan bought out a series of books called the Judge Dredd Collection, which were a bigger format, the same landscape style, but a bigger format than the Daily Dredd Volume 1.
Yeah.
They did Collection, Collection 2, Collection 3, Collection 4, Collection 5, which were fairly thin softback books, and then they bought out a mega collection, which was a hardback, but again, the bigger size than the Daily Dredds. And these were always favourites of mine, and of course I've got them all.
Right.
But they're sometimes quite difficult to get hold of. The last one was a Fleetway one.
Yes.
But I think the previous ones may have been even tighter initially. Let me just get one out. Let me have a look and see if it might have a date on it as well. But for the first one, it's got a lovely cityscape on the back of it of Mega City One. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, I was looking at them earlier on the comic book database, and I think you're right. They were sort of like 1985 to 1990.
IPC, mate. 85 seems to be the copyright date.
Yeah.
I mean, it's advertised in the prog for 24p.
Right.
So that's how long ago it was. It seems to be 85.
And as you say, those collections, quite hard to get hold of nowadays, although perhaps... few more have come onto the market since this hardback came, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, eBay's a wonderful thing. It made life so much easier.
Yes.
When it took off. I mean, I think the last one's very difficult to get hold of.
Right.
Which was in Fleetway.
And lovely hardback one.
No, there's one to five, and then there's the mega collection, which is the hardback.
Ah, right, okay.
One to five are softbacks, and then you got the hardback, which is the mega one.
Right.
But they're always worth getting. I mean, one thing to notice about these strips is, because they'd already been paid for, is that they were often used for the sort of sci-fi specials and then the annuals as well, because it was cheap filler form, of course, and it was less work for the editors to put together.
Yes.
So you often saw them appear not long afterwards. You know, if they were in the Star in 86, you were quite likely you were going to see them in 87 in a different, you know, format somewhere.
Because that's the other annotation that often appears at the bottom of the page is, you know, 2000 AD annual, 1985 or something like that, as you say. Yeah. Or the sci-fi special, Judge Dredd Annual 1984. I'm just looking at flicking through the bottoms of the pages, so yeah.
There was a problem with some of them, is that when they reprinted them, they did change the name of them, which was a bit of a funny one. I mean, there's one called Mobile Muggery, just one that, you know, I picked up the page here, and when it was reprinted, they called it Mobile Muggers. And there's other ones where they changed the name. There was one about a Lopin that I remember that was... something about getting married, and then it was something, and then they reprinted something like "All You Need Is a Ladder."
Right.
And when you look at the original artwork, they write all over it the name of it and then change it. Because with the going back to the Daily Dreads Volume 1 book, the early strips, if you notice, there's no header at the top of the page. It's all blank.
Yes.
Well, on the artwork, that's where it would have said Judge Dredd appearing, you know, Judge Dredd Daily or Saturday, etc., etc. But often they would peel that off and stick it on next week one because they were cheap like that.
Yes, of course, sure.
But then as you get further into the book, the artwork got smaller and smaller. As it went on, the artwork for the Saturdays got smaller and smaller. So when you start seeing Judge Dredd in the top left-hand corner of the first cell,
yeah,
that's where the size of the artwork was shrinking, and they incorporated the logo into the artwork itself.
Right, so I'm somewhere about halfway through the book, and as you say...
Yeah, so if you go to page, for example, you go to page 147, say...
Yeah, got it.
They came to conquer. Now, that is the first one where you would have the strip at the top. Because it's a multi-part one, they put that underneath to include that. So you've got that to start with. But then when you get to page, say, 151, you've then got the Judge Dredd bit as a title.
Yes, Judge Dredd by John Wagner and Ron Smith.
Yeah. Now, if you go on a few more pages to, say, page, I don't know, you pick anyone, go to page, I don't know, 160.
Yeah, okay.
And when you look at those two, 160, 161, this is where the artwork was smaller again, and there's nothing at the top of this. What you see is the complete artwork, including the title.
Right.
Whereas before, you had the title at the top, which is why they cut out the artwork, to keep them similar sizes. So when you look at the original artwork, it gets smaller and smaller and smaller as time goes on, because the original pages, if you go... You know, right back to the start and look at the, you know, the. I mean, if you go back, sorry to get you back as well, but if you go right back to the first page.
Right, so back to the Richard Burton adaptation of Devil's Island.
Yeah, which was never sort of put together because basically that was a cut and paste from the original.
From Prog 2.
Artwork from Prog 2. So that's, you know, that's all been done from there. That's where they've used the film from that. So that actually never existed in that sort of format.
Right.
Because that was done from that. Because I know where the original artwork is for Whitey's Island, and that artwork's still like that. So he's basically taken the film or a copy of that artwork and sort of pasted it together to make this Saturday strip, and got that lettered separately. But the artwork for page 7, which is like the second one, which is Securopod Heist, is enormous. It's absolutely massive. You know, it's the sort of thing that would fill up a car boot almost. It must be 4 foot by 2.5 foot.
Really?
It's the size of a desk.
Right.
You know, if you think of a traditional drawing board that it was done on, it would fill that.
Yeah.
But by the time you get to like 86, you're probably looking at maybe 2 foot, 2.5 foot by 18 inches, you know.
And compared to the pages in this collection, this hardback here, when it appeared in the Daily Star,
all the same size.
So it's pretty much the same size as it appeared in the Star, then, is it?
Well, if you look at the detail on that page 7,
yeah,
you know, and then you go to, say, I don't know, page 200 and something, you know, pick anyone and then look at some of the detail there, and you'll see that, you know, you look in the details of the pods and the cars on the page 7 and then compare it to what you get later on.
Yeah.
You can just tell that, you know, because it's a smaller size that he's drawing
on. Things are starting to shrink down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, certainly in the early on stuff, and as you said, the glories of Ron Smith's art and of Mega City 1 and all the crazies. We've mentioned some of the stuff. There's Boeing, there's backgliders, there's fatties.
Oh, everything.
Yeah. You mentioned the face change crimes.
Max Normal, Shuggy.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the Cursed Earth in there, you've got the Flower Power with it, you know, you've got mutants, you've got different illnesses, you've got Ugly in there, you've got Space in there. I can't think of anything...
From Dredd's World that's not featured.
You've got Cadets in there. I can't think of anything that jumps out that's not in there that wasn't in there at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's been stuff in there since that's not in there at the time, but this is only up to 86. What was in Dredd at 86 that's not been in these?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everything from Dredd's World is there. You know, there's even a sort of appearance of Judge Death, although it's, again, I think it's another Judge Death Jimp, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of stuff. There's nothing. I mean, there really isn't anything that's missing. I mean, and Anderson's in there, you know, so.
Okay, so it's fabulous stuff. And as you say, they've appeared before in some of the annuals, but also in the collections that you've mentioned that were sort of slightly tricky to get a hold of until eBay came along. But then how about this particular volume? Because, you know, Keith Richardson, the graphic novels editor for 2000 AD, he said, you know, he says in his introduction that when he started, one of his first intentions was to produce collections of the Daily Star Dreads. And I know he spoke about it on the Everything Comes Back to 2000 AD podcast sometime in 2013.
Yeah.
And said it was going to happen.
The funny thing was, on the 2000 AD online forum, there has been a little thread going for some time where there's been a small group of us that have sort of had this as a, I don't know if a hobby is a sub hobby is the right word, but have had this as a thread of interest for some time.
Yeah.
Mainly because, you know, there's geeks and then there's mega geeks and then there's just complete nerd geeks, I suppose.
Levels 1, 2, and 3.
Yes. But it's just, I've always found it quite interesting because it's quite, because it is such a contained world on its own and it's, the quality of it's so good. It's, this is when you, I mean, maybe later we can talk about the other versions of the of Daily Strips that have contained Dread as well, which we may or may not see at some point in the future.
Right.
But there's always been a small group of us on the forum that have been interested in this and trying to get a complete list because the trouble with the artwork, on the artwork itself, what they do is the printers would write on the artwork, because the artwork itself is numbered. If you look at some of the pages, you'll see a number on it that Ron drew on it at the time to say this is number, you know, on page 6, on page 55, the artwork says number 50, Flower Power is number 50.
Right.
Okay. So you think, okay, number 50 is Flower Power. Right. That's good. Okay. But somewhere on that artwork, you will have, it will say X so day, Saturday, the whatever of whatever. You know, it'd be Saturday the 12th of September, 84, 3, 2, whatever. Okay. Now, often that will get crossed out and you'll have another date put on it because they will, for some reason, print it a week later, a week earlier, 2 weeks later.
Right.
So you'll have two dates on it. One of them will have a and often it won't get crossed out. It'll just have two dates on it. Right?
Yeah.
And then if it gets reprinted somewhere else, they just write another date on it. But they won't necessarily cross either the other two out.
Okay, so it gets a bit confusing.
So you can have several dates on it, and then people start writing other numbers on it for, I guess, something to do with the printing process. Well, it might get, you know, it'll be like the 55th one that will get printed. So it'll have 55 on it as well. Not necessarily 50, but it'd be the 55th one of this series that's been printed. So someone will write 55 on it.
Right.
For some reason. So if you see a bit of artwork that's got all these numbers on it, when you try and put it on the list to try and get a complete list of what's been made, it's a nightmare.
Yes.
Because the artwork says 50, you've got several different dates of when it's been printed, and then you've got a 55 on the artwork as well, which you know. So when you try and compare all these different lists that people have got, it's a bit of a nightmare. Now, the guys in Ireland, because it was printed in the, I think it's the Irish Evening Herald printed it as well. So I don't know if they got it from buying it from the Daily Star or from Fleetway as well. I suspect they got it from the Daily Star as opposed from Fleetway. But I think a lot of those kept them there. But I don't know if they had a separate running order to the Daily Star. So this is why Keith had to go up to the British Museum, because in theory they have a copy of everything that's been printed in the UK.
Yes.
Now, of course, that's the theory. And it's a lot of the early stuff or earlier stuff is on microfiche, of course. So
yeah.
You've got to assume the microfiche is there. You've got to assume it's complete. And you've got to assume this, that, and the other. So unless someone has got a copy of every Daily Star from 81 through to 86, and you can physically get it out and open it up and go, right, on that date, this is what was printed.
Yeah.
You've got no exact way of going, right, that's that date, that's what was printed because I've got the physical copy in front of me. So it's a bit of a nightmare trying to get a complete list. And that's why when you have four or five of you trying to work together to do it, some have got artwork, some have got cutouts from paper, some have got original paper, some have been to the British Museum, some have got the Irish paper, you know, so between you, and I think that's how it started. And I don't know if that piqued Keith's interest, because we've done quite a bit of the work beforehand, or some of the work beforehand, and I think it was creating a bit of interest, so I don't know if that helped his decision or not.
Right. I was looking on the forum today for some of the threads about this. I did find the thread started by, I presume it's Lee Shepherd, who's mentioned in the introduction, who was trying to catalogue, as you say, the actual, you know, what strips were printed when, and get a complete list. And then, as you say, Keith Richardson's got to try and track down both the record of what was printed, but also trying to find either decent copies of it or original artwork. And I know that at some point in early, was it 2014? I think they put a call out on the forums because they were looking for some missing strips.
Yeah, what happened is, I think they'd gone up to the British Museum and looked at the microfiche, and I think either the microfiche was missing or the pages that they needed from the paper wasn't on the microfiche, something like that.
Yeah.
So they didn't have copies at all of some of the items they thought were printed. So people were saying, I've got a cutout of that one, or I've got a copy of the paper or something like that, which is fine. But if you look at page 123, I know it sounds a bit geeky going from page to page.
That's all right. Let's have a look.
I think it's page... No, it's not page 123. Sorry, page 113.
Okay.
You go to 113.
Yep, got it.
You'll see the difference between a page where they've scanned it off artwork, which is on the left, and a page where they've scanned it off the paper, which is on page 113. So 112 is off artwork.
Yep.
And 113 is off the paper.
So on my left, I've got Escape Looney, and it is crystal clear, beautifully reproduced. And then on the right, Baffin Island Ambassador, and it's a lot more sort of inky and dark and...
Smudgy,
yeah.
Now, okay. if you imagine a whole page looking as though it did on the right-hand page, do you think that would sell very well?
No, that's the problem, isn't it? You know, So they put out the call for missing strips and artwork, and several fans do come forward with original artwork. And dare I say, you're mentioned in the introduction as well, Guy.
Well, I think several fans had copies of, or had strips that they'd cut out.
I don't think
anyone else came forward with original artwork.
Right.
I may be wrong, and I may be doing people a disservice there, but as far as I'm aware, I don't think they scanned. I mean, I could be wrong. But as far as I know, I don't think anyone else had original artwork that they scanned. I could well be wrong, and I hope I am, because obviously with original artwork, that's the difference between those two pages. And I'd rather see a nice clear scan than not.
Yeah, absolutely.
One reason Ron's artwork is available is because at one point Ron's agent sold all of his artwork to one of the dealers that's actually not that far from where I live.
Right.
So I know where most of his artwork went. But this was in the days when you could pick up pages quite, you know, this is where you can pick up McMahon pages for like 40 quid and stuff like that. So he's had his pages for a long, long time. So I've managed over the years to pick up some.
You travel to the nerve centre with a pile of original art, says the introduction.
I think part of being a fan is that if you can help out where you can, you do, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I think it's...
You know, if we make the effort to go and see the droids and, you know, go and stroke their egos and get them to sign stuff for us and do geek stuff, then, you know, you do it for a reason. And the reason is because you want to see the best possible output from them. You know, you don't want them to get lazy and just make it easy because they can, like some of the US guys do. You want to keep challenging them to do their best, and one way you do that is you go and give them a bit of a hard time and say, well, what are you doing next, and it's got to be better than this, and it's got to be better than that, you know. But so what you do is you give them something to aim for. So if you turn up with old artwork, especially like Ron's stuff, and say, right,
look at this,
this is what Ron was doing, why aren't you doing stuff as good as that, you know, and you give them something to aim for. So
and, of course, famously, this is what Ron was doing, working against the alarm clock as well.
Yes, of course. And he was quite open about it. He would set, because he was getting a page rate that they all do now, he would set an alarm clock for X amount of time, and he would say, right, this is the amount of time I've got to do this page for me to make a living, I mean, he was very quick. I mean, for the quality he did and the output he did.
And the detail in there.
And the detail he did, he was phenomenal. And you got to remember, for the first, I think, the first 300 dread strips in the prog, he did over 200 of them, I believe.
Right.
I'm not sure the exact numbers, but if you look at the volume he did, he beats everyone else into a hat. So, you know, he doesn't get the credit he deserves because everyone goes, oh, you know, Carlos, oh, Mick, oh, Brian. Yeah, but if it doesn't float your boat, it doesn't float your boat. So,
yeah, I mean, I love them all. We've talked about all the artists on all those ones you've named so far on this podcast, but I really do have a love of this early Ron Smith Judge Dredd stuff. And the Daily Dreads is, well, it's a beautiful tribute to Ron Smith, really, isn't it?
Well, it's quite interesting. We know we were looking at those two pages. If you look at Escaped Looney,
yeah,
right, that figure on the top left panel,
yes,
that is Ron Smith.
There he is himself. He's drawn himself into the first panel.
He's drawn himself into the first panel.
I'm just trying to see what the badge, Judge Badge name says, but it's covered by his microphone cable, I think.
Yeah,
lovely. So he's actually drawn himself into the book. Wonderful. Yeah.
And it doesn't often happen, but, you know, yeah. I know Massimo used to do it a lot, and I love Massimo Bellardinelli stuff as well, but because it's so off the wall. But Ron's stuff I like because it is so lifelike, I think, so believable, you know. And I think that's what does it for me to a certain extent.
So, I mean, one of the things that gets me about this book, as you know, is that it is, in a way, it's like you said, it's the fans. It's the fans who've been cataloguing what appeared when, trying to find, you know, missing titles. And then, of course, as you say, people who've got copies. Somebody had a copy from the Irish Evening Herald of the very first Saturday strip. And then people like yourself, well, you know, you're the one with the original art for some of these pages. So it's splendid. I think it's a remarkable tribute.
Yes, I mean, Keith and everyone else there, I mean, Catherine Science is not there anymore, who's the one that scanned it all in.
Yeah.
Did a really great job. I don't know if Pi did some of the designers. I mean, I was just looking at the credits at the start. Graphic design was Simon Parr and Sam Gretton. Simon's not there anymore because he's doing his own artwork for stuff. Catherine Simons has left, unfortunately. I mean, Richard Burton, I mean, we ought to talk about how it appeared as well. He does an intro for this book as well. But, you know, effectively, it got commissioned. It got sold by someone else, as a lot of the stuff did back then. And he got dumped on his desk basically saying, well, you've got a couple of weeks, get on with it and do it. And
yeah.
He was like, right, okay, what do I do now?
Yes.
And if it hadn't been someone like Ron and someone like John and Alan who could do it, it would never have worked. So
yeah,
we're lucky to get anything at all. And I think they've done such a great job because it's a lovely. I mean, the quality of the book is great. I mean, it's well bound. The graphics on the front of it is great, and on the back the cover. I mean, I was talking to him about the cover of the second one. When I was at Rebellion one day and we were discussing that, and I said, you've got to go, the one they've chosen is excellent. There was two or three options. I said, no, you've got to go for that one. And it's a great Gibson, traditional Gibson Dread cover, and it's brilliant. When you see it up close, it's really good. It's really going to fit in with this one as well. Lovely grey scales. Because, you know, I mentioned the back cover of the first Judge Dredd collection, the softback.
Yes.
Well, I've just looked at the front cover of the Daily Dredd. The cityscape in the background.
Yep.
Is actually the back cover.
So that's what appeared on the back of the first collection.
Yeah, in grayscale, or in like a blue grayscale.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I've just noticed that. So, yeah.
It spills over onto the back cover of this as well, I think.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Lovely.
So, you know, they do a really good job and they've put it together so well. You know, and it's nice paper stock, and it's well made, and it's really clear. And I'm guessing it sold really well for them to be doing a second one. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, as you say, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. It's lovely hardback, beautifully bound, lovely paper. I think the reproduction, especially as you say, where they had the art, is just fantastic. We get an introduction from Keith. You mentioned Richard Burton's introduction.
Mm-hmm.
And then the details of all the strips contained.
And the biographies at the back as well.
Bios of the creators at the back.
Although Ron's one's very short.
Yeah, I mean, you know, perhaps the tribute is in, you know, obviously his artwork is his lasting tribute, but it also, yeah. I mean, Richard Burton's introduction you've mentioned, and it says, you know, he was in a tight spot, so he turned to the mega professional hands of Ron Smith, who turned the job around within a few days.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that's Ron. And of course, it also mentions the lettering taken care of by Dread Letterer Supreme Tom Frame, who worked in the command module just a desk away from him.
Yeah, I mean, Tom, I mean, we forget about letterers, really. They can make or break strips. Tom Frame, you know, I know he's departed now. But, I mean, Annie Pankhurst and all those guys, you know, they don't get the credit that perhaps we should give them, because we don't see it as a skill in itself. It really is as well.
Yeah.
And when you see the original, especially in these early days where they had to cut out the bubbles and stick them on by hand.
Stick them on and everything like that. Yeah, absolutely.
I've just noticed, I just found that page. If you go to page 75.
Right, okay. Hope everybody's playing along at home. 75.
Yeah, you'll see one of these ISO block judges. So you'll see a judge uniform you'll probably never see again.
Oh, no, that's interesting. You've picked that one out, because that's the story Christmas Pardon.
Where they extended it and then shortened it again, didn't they?
Yeah, and I sometimes play this game with my guests on this podcast of a fantasy artwork page, Grail page.
Right.
And if I was to pick a Ron Smith page from this book, that was the one that stood out to me for some reason. I just like that page. It's beautiful. But as you say, we've got an interesting judge uniform that we never see again, do we?
No, yeah. and you never do.
No, but the isoblock judge, yeah.
With a different helmet, you know.
And a beautiful Ron Smith image of Dredd on the last page.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The last panel, rather.
It's all very Ron Smith down to the T.
Yeah, absolutely. Dredd in snow, and it's just lovely. So, yeah, that's a very interesting page, actually. I love that one. Okay, so, as we've said, it's a lovely book. It's a...
Highly recommended.
Highly recommended.
If you like Dredd and you haven't got this, the answer is why.
Well, it's an essential. It's an essential for your shelf.
Early Dredd. There's nothing to say. You know, it's written by the two people that wrote and still are canon Dredd.
Yeah.
If you want to, you know, the first, you know, early 80s Dredd, there's nothing. You can read all the case files, but this sums it out probably better than the early case files, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to know everything about Dredd's world, it's all in here.
No filler.
All thriller, no filler. Yeah.
That's the...
And of course, as I said, it's a beautiful tribute to Ron Smith. I think it's also a fitting tribute to the fans who sort of rallied around.
Yeah, definitely.
In fact, as you said, who actually sort of started it off by trying to catalogue the whole process.
Mm-hmm.
So it's there. It's wonderful. Now, you've mentioned Volume 2, which is out already, although I haven't received my copy yet.
I think it's due out very soon. I'm not sure if it's actually shipping as yet. I think it's due...
Well, I have actually seen a copy on the shelf at Forbidden Planet in Cambridge.
Oh, there you go.
So there you are. It is out, although I'm waiting for mine on order. And again, you're mentioned in Dispatches, Guy, in the introduction. Yes, you are. You're mentioned in the introduction to Volume 2 as well. So tease us, what have we got to come in Volume 2? You've mentioned a wonderful Ian Gibson cover.
Yeah, the cover on it is a great cityscape with Dredd, and I'm just trying to remember off the top of my head. I think it's, is it Anderson on the front as well?
Yes, Dredd and Anderson appear on the front.
Yeah, in the same sort of grayscale with the red as well, with the same sort of design. It's really, from what I remember.
The same trade dress, yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really nice. The same heavy duty book. Going to look really nice. Hopefully all the spine lines up so it keeps a certain birdies happy and all that sort of stuff.
People who do get a little bit...
Well, I agree with him, but...
Right. A little twitchy about spines, yeah.
Yeah, he'd be happy now he's got a mention anyway.
Yeah, jolly good.
But to be honest, I was really quite grateful for Volume 1, because I know they did the bookplate edition that they did.
Yes.
Because I bought one anyway, but they actually sent me number 0, so I've got 0 of 250 as well.
Oh, it's signed by Ron Smith.
No, Ron, well, no, but it's, but with
Benny. It had a Ron print, didn't it?
Yeah, the Rebellion one did.
Yeah.
But they did 250 numbered ones, but they obviously did 251 because I've got 0 of 250. So.
Ah, very nice. Well, that will make a certain John Bird is slightly envious.
Well, you know. You need to every now and again.
Yeah.
So, but volume two, I'm really looking forward to it, to when I get my copy. Now, the strips that I'm aware of, it starts with The Weirdies by Ian Gibson. And I have to say, I mean, I love Ian Gibson's artwork as well. Again, another old school artist that, again, these old guys, I don't know how they were doing it at the day. I mean, there's some stories about Ian that really would make your hair curl, but that's not for this sort of discussion. But the detail on The Weirdies is just superb. I think what Ian used to do to a certain extent was draw it on like a full scale bit of paper and then cut it down. So these are the daily strips. So this would be where they would appear Monday to Friday. Although obviously when there was a bank holiday, it would sort of screw it up a bit. So there are, again, this is another one where trying to list all these has been a bit of a nightmare because, you know, sometimes the papers would print, you know, they wouldn't print the Monday one, but they would print Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, but just miss out Monday. Sometimes they would print Monday's one on Tuesday, but then miss out Tuesday and then go Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Right.
Or do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday and just not print Friday. So there was all sorts of issues with them. But so the ones they've done, because the first two weekly ones were in the first one. So Alien Tongues and Pyro, I believe, let's just check, were in the first ones, weren't they? Yeah, Alien Tongues and Pyro, both by Ron Smith, were in the first volume, weren't they?
Yes.
So Weirdies by Ian Gibson's in the second one. Mean Machine, again by Ian Gibson's in the second one. Then we've got, I think, Bride of Death and Vigilante, again, both by Ian. Because I haven't seen it, so I'm not, this is what I'm led to believe, but not having seen it, I'm not exactly sure. I think Bride of Death and Vigilante, both by, again, by Ian Gibson are in it. Then we've got A Guide to Mega City Laws in it. Then we've got Crime of Passion, which is by Barry Kitson.
Oh, right, okay.
Now Barry Kitson hasn't done huge amounts for 2000 AD, because he went to the States quite early on.
Right.
So, there's not a lot of this stuff around. Then you've got Fat City by Ian Gibson. Then The Cursed Earth by Ian again. Under City, The Menagerie by Mike Collins. So this is where Mike Collins starts to do a lot of the daily ones.
And I think he's done an introduction for Volume 2 as well, I was reading on Saturday, yeah.
Right, quite possibly, yeah, because Mike will be... Because Mike, these days, of course, does huge amounts of the Doctor Who stuff.
Yes.
It seems to be big on the Doctor Who circuit. And then there's Monster Maker, again, by Mike. So I think the last two are by Mike. So I think it's all Ian Gibson, one by Barry Kitson, and then two by Mike Collins.
Right.
And I think that's it for Volume 2.
Right. Lovely stuff to look forward to.
Yes, I'm looking forward to seeing it myself because I've not seen one. Because last time I was there, it was still due to come back from the printers. It was due very soon, but it hadn't actually come back from the printers yet. It was still in transit. Now, which is great. So that takes us up to basically the end of 88, or basically to the end of January 89. So it'll be, what's that, 87... 88, okay, so that takes us like to 2 years of the daily strips. Now, considering the daily strips went on till the end of 98, wasn't it?
Yeah, 1998, I think.
Yeah, but the last stuff in 98 was the Blackwood incident, which was like a crossover between the X-Files and 2000 AD, which was done by Charlie Adlard.
Oh, right.
Yeah, because Charlie Adlard did some of the later stuff. I mean, it was all sorts of... I mean, when you get down the tail... let me go through some of the other daily stuff, because you've got Ian... I mean, Mike did a load after the... what we just talked about, and then you had Carlos Pino did some more, Ronda came back and did some more, but Carlos and Ronda did loads between them. So I'm just trying to look at the list there. And then Dylan Teague did some, Ronda did a load more, David Bertram did some.
Oh, right, yeah.
Then Charlie came on board, Andrew Curry did a series... and then basically Charlie finished it up, sort of finished mid-98, I think it was.
So
in the style.
If there's 2 years in volume two,
yeah,
we could be having another, what, four or five volumes in theory.
We could do. The problem's going to be, of course, is that after this book, I'm just looking at the... So this was like 89. So I think the problem we've got, all of 89... we've got, yeah, so the start of 89 was Ian Gibson, and then we got Mike, yeah, 89. Let's see, 89 and 90, apart from one from Ian Gibson, it's all Mike Collins.
Right.
So And Mike basically did them all until mid-91 after that. Oh, and then he had a short break from Carlos, and then, yeah, till, yeah. So this is where you might have a problem, because if it's all just one artist, you know, you might struggle a bit.
Right.
You know, if it's not one of the old school artists, that's nothing against Mike.
No. Well, I see what you mean, because, I mean, we do have a love for the early artist work,
yeah,
and for getting fine examples of it. As you say, that's why Volume 1 for Ron Smith, and I suppose Volume 2 for Ian Gibson, are going to be such important
such
books. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And at the time, they were putting so much work into it, of course.
Yeah.
I think with the daily ones, because you don't get so much in each one, I think the quality does go down after a while, you know, because, you know, to a certain extent, I think, you know, naturally, I don't know. I mean, I'm unfair. I mean, I know the stuff that's got to be in Volume 2 is superb. The artwork I've seen is just, I mean, some of that weirdest artwork, especially, is just off the scale. It's Ian Gibson at his best.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to it now. You've got me,
appetite. If you like Ian Gibson in any shape or form, you've got to be getting it, because it's as good as anything he ever did anywhere else. You know, because the stuff I'd like to see as well is, you know, they did, because the other strips that, I don't know if people know about this, they did the News of the World colour strips. I don't know if anyone knew about that.
Yeah.
They did colour strips in News of the World. Now, they did 18 of them, and it's where you actually see Dredd without his helmet, of course.
Oh, right.
This is all fully painted by Ron Smith. Now, unfortunately, it's based on the 95 film, so yep. Without his helmet, he is Stallone. It was, I mean, I think they only produced 18 of them, but I have seen other artwork where it goes on, and this was like the half size, like the Saturday Daily Dreads. But I have seen, when I was at Ron's, I did see there was full page stuff. So I don't know if it was ever meant to go on to be like a full page spread as well.
Yeah.
But I don't know quite what happened with that. It seemed to sort of, I don't know if it sort of got cancelled or anything, but there was 18 of them apparently.
And have they ever been collected anywhere?
No.
No. Oh,
no.
Right.
But I know they have taken scans of at least 12 of them.
Right.
So we may, but I don't know if there's licensing issues, you know, because I don't know who owns News of the World stuff now compared to anyone else. See, this is part of the issue, you know. You get into this quagmire now with licensing. It's like,
who owns this, and who owns the image rights from the movie, and...
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, of course, the other stuff that people may not know about, the Metro Daily stuff that happened. Now, some of this was reprinted in the magazine, in 2004, 2005, in the magazines. Now, they did manage to reprint one of them twice in magazine 221 and 235, which was a bit of an interesting one. But there was quite a few of them that they did. Modern Artists, I think they did a few of them. They did sort of about 48, 50 of them, maybe.
Right.
Most of them were, you know, weeks worth, yeah, but not necessarily well-known artists. They were sort of subbed out to someone else. But Steve Roberts did some of them. I think he was the only UK artist that did some. So some of that was quite good.
Presumably, apart from being in the magazine,
never been reprinted.
Never been reprinted elsewhere.
No, that's right. You know, there's quite a few. Well, I suspect some people. Well, wherever the Metro was, it was in London. I think it was in some of the other bigger towns as well, but I don't know where the Metro was actually published.
No, depends which train station you got on it.
Well, yeah, and if you could get hold of one.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it was published in Newcastle as well, but I don't know. I presume it's all major cities over here in the UK, but I don't know.
Okay.
But they're the other ones that I know of. I mean, it may well have been published abroad as well, but I don't know. You know, I swear it'd be nice to know. It'd be nice to have a sort of a sub list somewhere of all the, you know, because it's been the Irish Herald, was it Irish Daily Herald or whatever it was?
Irish Evening Herald or something.
Irish Evening, yeah. How I mean, I'm sure it's been syndicated elsewhere, but it'd be interesting to see where else it's turned up.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, another database project for somebody, another catalogue.
Well, this is where your collector in you comes out, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. Wanting to know.
Everyone loves a list.
Yes, exactly. We all love a list and we all love completion. Yeah.
How sad can you get?
No, not at all. So, Guy, they're absolutely marvellous. Volumes 1 and 2.
Yes. I'm just looking forward to seeing 2 in my hands.
Yeah, absolutely. So both volumes are available from the 2000 AD store for £30 each. I'm not even going to mention the digital because these are ones where you really, really need the hard copy, don't you?
You need the hard copy in your sweaty little hands to see the detail.
Absolutely. And if you haven't got hold of a copy of the Daily Dreads Volume 1, then what are you waiting for? Go out and get one.
Yeah.
Splendid. All right, Guy, anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
No, but thanks for having me, and I'll have to pick another book fairly soon. It's been good fun.
Oh, good. Well, excellent. Yes, let me know. Do pick a book. And thank you to everybody else for listening. Do get in touch if you want to join me to talk about a 2000 AD book. You'll find a list of all the episodes so far and the books chosen for upcoming episodes on the Facebook page. So please pop across there and check out the lists. Do follow us on Twitter at MCBCpodcast or email me mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks to RoboDub for the title music. And as ever, thanks to Brian from the British Invaders Science Fiction Podcast for audio expertise and for hosting Mega City Book Club. And as ever, you'll find all these links on megacitybookclub.com. And until next time on Mega City Book Club, when we'll be passing judgment on another 2000 AD book, it's goodbye from me and...
It's goodbye from him.
Thank you very much. Goodbye. Goodbye.